Thank you. Item number 14. Declaration of need for fully qualified teachers.
This is a document that is required by the CPC. And we declare a need, a possible need of fully qualified teachers and class certification. And we make this declaration, and it happens to be we need somebody to have an emergency waiver or anything like that. We haven't had to have that for years, but just in case. We have to have this document on file and adopted by the board prior to being able to do that. So it kind of protects us in case of an emergency. I don't foresee that we will need this, except possibly with the CLAB. I, again, don't foresee that either. We haven't had to have any emergency or waivers for you.
For which one?
But if we don't file this and we do need to have it, we'll be stuck and won't be able to do it.
Okay.
You have the teacher librarian, though.
Again, we only have one librarian in the district.
Yeah, we do.
And so if we needed, saw that we had a need and we didn't have this and we couldn't find somebody with that credential, and there is somebody with the waiver. So it's, so that kind of protects us. I don't foresee that we wouldn't try to find somebody with these things. And then, in fact, when we talked about finding credentialed people, we try to avoid the waivers and anything else. And that's why we haven't had them for years, because we basically don't entertain them. But I don't want to get stuck where we would have to if we can't find anybody else and we don't have this on file.
Why does it say 20 next to the CLAD?
We have a number of teachers who don't have their CLAD, and if it turns out we can't rearrange schedules to get kids that have EDL services into their classes, then we may need to get waivers for them based on that need.
And
we've been able to avoid it. We've been able to schedule kids in the right classes. We have sent the message to the teachers that don't have their CLAD that you have till the end of next year to get your CLAD or else.
We've done that?
We haven't. We gave them a number of times to do it. We've done a lot of things over the years.
We've let people go because of that?
We haven't let them go. No, I didn't say that. Okay, but what we said was we've given them opportunities over the years. We've given professional development. In fact, you know, we've paid stipends for people to go through the program. But some people didn't finish the program. Some people didn't do that. They do cause problems sometimes with our master schedule and be able to schedule EL students into their class. To avoid that, we said, listen, get the program or you could be skipped in a layoff. And that obviously, if that time came, then we can say, you know, do you want to skip these people that don't have CLAD? They could have been here 20 years. If they don't have CLAD, they could be skipped and be the first to be laid off.
Are there studies that show that CLAD teachers are better than non-CLAD teachers?
It's not so much whether they're better or not. They have to have that qualification in order to teach EL students.
I don't understand that, or the waiver. But I was wondering, I remember asking this a while back, like a long time ago, I don't know, to ask for some kind of information. I'm sure the CLAD people have to have some kind of study that shows that it benefits students compared to those that don't have it.
I've never seen that. I don't know whether or not I've seen it. But I've never seen that research or seen that.
Well, there are never supplemental authorizations. Uh-huh. It's not just CLAD. Since then, there, I think, have been at least three other avenues for teachers to have
qualified CLAD. And every new teacher gets it through the
Now it's integrated into teacher
training. Right. Yeah.
So, at least I would say for about the last 6-7 years, it's been integrated.
Yep. Because I used to vote against the stipends, that's why I know.
Okay. Who will move this?
I'll move it.
Thank you. And who will second it?
I'll second.
Okay, declaration of need for fully qualified educators moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Ms. Shoemaker to adopt the declaration of need for fully qualified educators for the 2012-2013 school year. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Carries 4-0. Okay, we have a presentation. Mr. Minot has waited all night. I will turn this over to Ms. Kaplan. Thank you.
Basically, this is our information report to talk about the 12-13 budget. The purpose of it tonight is to go over the budget, but also when the board does adopt the budget, necessary that we have outlined recommendations for how we're going to deal with possible cuts going forward. And we're going to, again, bring this up to the board and have a discussion about some of those issues that we're facing.
Are there changes in it since our...
There's a few.
Okay.
Yeah, a few.
Are they highlighted in here?
I was going to say, boy,
yes,
we could give them to our members.
They're highlighted here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Again, we went yesterday to school services for the May revision, and we tried to update some of this for the May revision.
Okay. I'll get started. Again, respected board members, superintendent and cabinet, and members of audience, this is our first draft budget for 12-13. Again, this is based on our second interim. The basis of this budget was our second interim and subsequent changes. On our second interim, when we did our multi-year projections, we did include the governor's January budget proposal. What we have done in this is basically we have taken the skeleton from our second interim and also included the May revise. One thing I wanted to just make sure before I start is the information at this point of time is very fluid. Packet that we passed out on Friday, by this time, mm-hmm. it's already changed. Some of the numbers that we are hearing, and I'll kind of try to highlight some of the changes that
some
we
of
are
you
hearing.
Have in here changed yesterday.
So. Right. And we are still parsing the data. Having said that, we are still parsing the data of the May revise. There is information that we are waiting from the county side so that as it comes, we'll revise this budget and we'll come up with a second draft before we go out for our budget adoption. One of the things I just wanted to start mentioning is how does the May revise look compared to the January initial proposal? Overall, for education, it's okay because when the governor proposed the January proposal, he projected that for 11-12, that is this current year, the deficit would be about $2.2 billion. It has subsequently grown to $3.3 billion. But he's not taking any money from 11-12 budget. So he's keeping the school as a whole. One thing that came up is the deficit for 12-13 has grown from 9.5 to about 15.7. So the trigger that he mentioned on the January, that kind of increased. So we are going to get about, if the trigger fails, if the tax initiative does not pass, then our deficit would be much higher. The other thing that's on the May revise, and it also on the January proposal, is you will hear the term weighted student funding formula that also came up. Basically, traditionally, the education has been funded through what we call the revenue limit. And that is going to change based on the proposal to weighted student funding formula. It's going to be staggered over the next 7 years right now, with 5% of the funding being weighted student funding formula for 12-13. But he also mentioned that he will keep the district whole for 12-13 if we lose. Right now, we don't have enough data points to collect to see how the weighted student funding formula is going to affect us, whether it's going to be going down or not. Hopefully within a month or two, we'll be able to compute that data. Okay. The way I structured the presentation is we'll go over the basic assumptions that is there on the 12-13 budget, the revenue assumptions and the expenditure assumptions. Then I'll move over to the projection number, the multi-year projection. Then we'll revisit the assumptions and some of the unknowns at this point of time. We'll go over the cash flow, and then I'll open it up for the considerations that our superintendent mentioned that we have to discuss to see how we address the contingency. And at the end, I have one slide for a timeline going forward. The revenue limit is basically being projected. We are projecting a flat ADA growth for the three out years. It's still assuming the revenue limit model because at this point of time, we don't have enough data for with weighted student funding formula. The county is basically projecting two scenarios, and it's basically asking the district that they can either adopt a conservative approach or an optimistic approach. The optimistic approach assumes that the initiative will pass and the revenue would be continued. The conservative, right now, it's kind of triggering at about $441 per ADA. Reduction. When the governor's January proposal came out, the number was $370 for ADA. Last week it was $410, and that was the number I had kind of shown on the Friday packet. But the Department of Finance had a mistake on their computation, so the number is 441. And that's on actually blue. It doesn't show well on the slide, but it's just a change from the previous. The people transportation, we had a flip-flop. The initial governor's proposal, he said that people transportation will not be funded. Subsequent Senate Bill 81 said it will be funded, but we'll take a hit on the revenue limit. So the total was about $55. And now he says that the people transportation will be funded going forward. And this people transportation will be outside the weighted student funding formula. There are two items which are outside the weighted student funding formula. One is people transportation, and the other is TIIG, which is the targeted instructional improvement grant. So those are the only two items which are outside the weighted student funding formula. And there is no COLA for revenue limit for this year, 12-13. The revenue assumptions, another big pocket of money that we get is the class size reduction. We do assume that we'll still be funding at level one with about 122 classes that the district operates at 20 students per class. The interest income is primarily the income we receive from the county treasury on our school pooled account, and the lottery income will be 118. On the slide that I packet that I passed earlier, it was 117.5. So we do see a 50 cents increase on our lottery income. And that's the unrestricted. On the restricted side, we also get about $23 for our from the lottery for instructional purpose, instructional materials.
I'm sorry, you said that was the restricted side, the 118?
The 118 is the unrestricted.
Okay,
we get an additional $23.50 for the restricted, and that's for instructional books.
Thank you.
Okay. So those were the revenue assumptions. On the expenditure assumptions, some of the staffing steps that we took during this year that will affect our 12-13, we are basically assuming a step movement for all the qualified employees at this point of time. The certificated, classified, and the administrative staffing has been, I kind of put three bullets out there. And I've also included a consumer price index increase, which is about 2.3% for the projected cost of utilities. And the district contribution for health and welfare is capped at $8,000 per employee. Other assumptions on our expenditure. For EDUD, we have projected the growth and the cost for 12-13, but for the two out years, 13-14 and 14-15, we have not included the ADA growth or the corresponding increase in cost. Because typically the county would question if we project an increase in ADA. We have to justify. And the statutory fringe benefits rates are, I kind of did a chart on those 2 years. The only thing that changed is the PERS changed from 10.92% to about 11.41%. And also for the state unemployment insurance went down actually from 1.61 to 1.1%. So those were the only two changes.
Unemployment insurance went down?
I'm sorry,
unemployment insurance went down.
Okay. Yeah. Also, one thing is the unemployment insurance is just the SEF contribution. Right now, we are still awaiting one of the contribution, what it's called the local experience charge. So that number is still to be published by the state.
So it could go back up?
The local, the school education fund would not go up. The local experience charge may go up by 2 or 3 basis points. Typically it goes up only by about 5 to 10 basis points or go down. And that's not a big hit for us. When we did the initial budget eruption for 11-12, if you recollect, we did project that we'll save about $2.1 million from 12-13 and 2.6 from 13-14. So some of the things that we did to achieve that saving of $2.1 million is from special education for 12-13, primarily through program takebacks. We are projecting that we'll be saving about $2.1 million from 11-12 and 12-13 from special education program takebacks. And those things are already in place. Special education staffing is already in place so that we'll be able to make that savings.
That's net savings.
I'm sorry?
That's going to be our net savings.
That's our net savings, yes. It basically, the cost for LACO was comparatively high compared to what we can provide the same service at. So I did want to bring that special education savings that we are projecting about $2.1 million savings from that, 12-13. Going back to the numbers that we are projecting, I'll just give you some of the numbers that we had initially. When we adopted our 11-12 budget last June, the projection was that we'll end up 11-12 with an ending fund balance of $13 million. Right now, based on the year-to-date activity, we'll end up the year with about $17.9 million. That's the bottom line at the end of the first year. For the 12-13 budget, we initially projected we'll be ending at about $7 million, ending fund balance. We are projecting we'll be ending at about $12 million at this point of time. And this constitutes both restricted and unrestricted. For the year two, we'll end about $9.9 million. On our adopted budget last year, it was about $3.1 million. So we have basically done significant savings and reduction in cost to achieve that saving. And this year being the 12-13 being the basis year, we have to go out for 14-15, which is the second out year. The goal was to get a target of about $8 million by the end of the third out year, which is about 10% of our minimum balance, 10% of our expenditure. Based on the empirical studies, typically a district is good if they have a balance of about 12 to 13% ending fund balance. But right now, a lot of districts are struggling to maintain even the 3% minimum fund balance. Our $8 million would be about 10% of our expenditure. The things, I mean, the highlights on the asterisks, if you see that the services and other operating expenditure is going down from $9.7 million to $7 million in 13-14, that's an assumption that we are saying that we'll save about $2.6 million in 13-14. We don't know where. Right now, it is used as a placeholder. And for 14-15, we are projecting about $700,000 saving, additional saving. And these are ongoing savings.
Those are additional reductions that we need to make.
These are additional reductions we need to make. The other thing I just wanted to highlight on this particular slide is the net increase-decrease in fund balance, which is the third row from the bottom. We are still spending more, what we call the deficit spending. But if you look at the deficit spending, the rate is going down on the deficit spending. So that's a good signal also that the county looks at when they certify our budgets. This is the optimistic version. What happens when the tax initiative does not pass? Basically, the expenditure remains the same. We'll be about $2.6 million ending fund balance on 13-14, which is our second out year. And that is the statutory minimum ending fund balance. So on our second out year itself, on the first out year itself, we'll be hitting the 3% minimum fund balance, and then year three will be a negative fund balance. So this will be termed as a qualified and negative certification by the county if we submit this budget at this point of time. Wrapping up again, what were the basic assumption? As I said, like we have assumed a $2.1 million saving in 12-13, primarily from special education takebacks. And there are two broad assumptions that we'll be saving about $2.6 million in 13-14 and about $700,000 in 14-15. Just as a placeholder, we put those in the services and other operating expenditure. The assumption is that the COLA will be fully funded for the two out years. For the last 2 years, the COLA has not been funded. They have increased the deficit factor. The other unknown item is the transitional kindergarten. We don't know how it will basically pan out at this point of time, what the cost would be, how would it going to be funded. Because the two houses of the legislature, they basically rejected the governor's proposal. So we'll have to wait till end of this year to figure out how it goes out. And the special education is that unknown cost. We don't know what's going to happen. There are some other unknowns at this point of time on the governor's proposal for the redevelopment agency shift. He said that the assets of the redevelopment agency, when it's liquidated, it can flow to the constituent school district. We don't know what the amount would be at this point of time. On the mandate reimbursement, he's going to replace it with a block grant. Typically, we don't budget for our mandate reimbursements. The special education, there is an allocation for the mental health services that's still being debated at this point of time. Title I may increase. We don't know what it is going to be. We can budget for it. And the federal revenue will decrease by 9.1% if the Joint Committee on Deficit Reduction in Washington does not come up with an agreement at this point of time. That we'll know only at the end of calendar year. The critical item that the county is going to review when they review our budget is the cash flow. A lot of districts are basically running out of cash, going for internal borrowing or trans. At this point of time, based on the optimistic assumption, we are okay for the remainder part of this year and even for 12-13. This cash flow is a hybrid, kind of. It assumes that it assumes optimistic revenue, but it also assumes that the deferral will be as is. What's the current deferral? If the tax initiative actually passes, if it's optimistic, the cash flow is going to improve significantly. The governor said that out of $6 billion, he will buy back about $4.3 billion of the deferrals that we hit. Because that's the significant issue that's hitting a lot of districts. So typically, if you looked at the cash flow situation like 5 to 6 years back, the lowest point of district's cash flow is typically November, used to be November and December. Right now with the deferral, it's June. So going through the cash flow, we'll be ending this year with about $8 million. 12-13 in June, that's the last column. We'll be ending with about $1.5 million. That's the minimum fund balance. One thing also I wanted to make sure that on this cash flow projection, we have assumed that we'll be paying the certificated staff in 10 payments. With some STIRS regulation, actually, this has changed. We'll be paying the certificated staff in 11 payments, actually, 11 equalized payment. So it'll be from August through June, instead of September through June. So that will impact the cash flow. It's not going to impact the ending fund balance for June. Okay. And if the tax initiative does not pass, really there'll be further deferrals. Right now about 30% of the money is deferred. It'll be 39%. And then we definitely have to go for some interfund borrowing or some mid-year trans. Next slide is basically the planning considerations or the options that's open for discussion at this point of time. I'll just highlight some of the items before I let the superintendent kind of jump in. Some of the options that are open are increasing the class size, basically taking the flexibility on the K through 3 class size reduction. And we kind of drafted up some numbers. If we go to 22-1, we'll be basically reducing the FTE by 9, and the saving will be about 558,000. As opposed to if we go to 32-1 ratio in K through 3, it'll affect 36 FTE, and the saving would be about 2.26 million. For K through 3 class size reduction, the flexibility is there till 13-14. It ends in 13-14, so we may not have that flexibility in 14-15. For the secondary, we have to determine what the class size reduction are going to be. Furlough days is another option that a lot of districts have gone through, and the numbers are basically there. If we take a one-day furlough for the whole district, it will save about $247,000. 4-day would be correspondingly $990,000. The reduction in salary, 1% of reduction in salary would be about $492,000 for the whole district. There could be reduction in other staffing, a freeze of step that would give us about $746,000 based on 11-12 data. And the other options are the elimination of transportation, which is basically the net savings. We lose the revenue, or the other options are the revenue increase, which is parcel tax and developer fee. These are not in any other any priorities right now. And then there are some other options like general obligation bonds, which are not very palatable at this point of time. And I'll let superintendent take over.
Basically, the county is asking us to have a contingencies plan, and not obviously so specific, because some of these things do have to be negotiated. And we've talked to our union about that. But we know to go with our optimistic plan that we have to cut $2.6 million next year. And so we need to put in this budget that you vote for areas that we're seriously considering at this point. And there, as you can see, there's no one silver bullet. There's not one option that's going to take care of the 2.6. And none of these are good. We're not going to tell you that any of these are great. And they're not exhaustive. These are just the high-ticket items that we've been looking at. You know, I think when we look at class size reduction, if we went to 22-1, I don't think that would have a big impact on student achievement. I would not want to go to 25 or 30 at this point in time. I think we're going to have to be looking at some furlough days. Unfortunately, right now, which is a little scary for me, what our governor is saying is if the initiatives don't pass, the option he's giving school districts is to go to 160 days and to lose 15 days in the next 2 years. I don't even know how that could be an option. I think we are in a place because of the number of days that we have. If we reduce by 2 furlough days, they could be non-student days. When you look at salary, you know, there's the various options. Obviously, they have to be all negotiated. Personally, I like the freeze because everybody across the board could do it, and it would affect everybody, and it would be a way for our district to come together and say, we all agree that we need to do this right now. Transportation, that seems kind of obvious. My only concern about transportation would be that would we lose ADA because kids are not getting to school. And, you know, we don't have that information. We don't know how that would be affected. But I need some help from you folks right now in terms of things that that we can put into this budget in terms of our contingency plan that we will be looking at next year.
Okay.
How do you want that? Like to fold up an item and give it to you, and then you read it out, or how do you want to do it?
I'd like to hear, is there consensus on any one of these, or do you want us just to put something together, and then at that point you agree or disagree with it? I need to hear from you what you'd like to do at this point. It's $2.6 million.
Right. The reduction in salary, what do our union contracts allow us? You have here a 1%, what does...
We have to be negotiated. There's nothing in our contracts that allows us to do any of this. The reduction in salary would have to be negotiated. The furlough days would have
no,
to be...
No, we could do the staffing without...
Class size reduction.
We can do that without negotiation.
And we can do transportation,
without it.
But everything else on here, it would have to be negotiated. And my
and increased revenue we can do without that.
Right. The ISS is kind of deceiving because right now that's being paid out of federal monies, and I don't know that it would put that much more back into the in the general fund. It would give more money to the schools to spend on other things, but that was a little deceiving in terms of actual money in the general fund. We'd have to look at reorganizing it, paying things for. So again, there's no silver bullet. You know, we just keep waiting for something to come across that we think is a good idea. All of these affect students, but maybe just go down and the things that you think you could consider would be helpful.
Freezing step, but that, and then if we, I know you said 22-1, the 25-1.
That's a bigger chunk. That'd be a bigger chunk.
It's more. Yeah, I'm looking at.
Now that we would probably have to lay off people, right? Because we might be able to absorb
class size reduction.
Might be able to absorb the 9, maybe.
Class size reduction most likely will be laying off people because
those are younger teachers too. Because we had the whole bump when we went down.
And there's only two ways you can
save money. It's in staffing or not, you know, paying salaries based on unlimited days. Those are the two major ways.
Yes.
For me, reduction in salary, I'd like to see more of it. Everybody is keep the class. That for me, I look at that's the last resort. But because you're right, it's what 80% of our budget. So I agree with Cammie about freezing the step.
It's 80 with the it's about 80 to 85% with all
salary and benefits.
Salary and benefits.
So if how much do we need to reduce?
2.65 for 13-14 and 700,000 for 14-15.
And then so if we were to reduce by 2% reduction in salary and freeze the step, we're 3/4 of the way there.
Well, and then if we do the two furlough days but those non-student days,
then
I think what you have to. All of that makes sense, but all of that needs to be negotiated.
Yeah, we're playing a game right now. We're playing Monopoly or something.
Well you asked us what our preferences are, right?
Absolutely.
So that's my preference.
Yeah,
so
I'm trying to keep it as fair as possible, and keeping this as many of the staff as we can.
Mm-hmm.
If we do the freeze step, we can still keep everybody.
Right.
If we reduce the 2 days, we can still keep all of the staff. So if they're looking at, and it's not going to directly hurt the students' learning,
right?
So if we're looking at those two as keeping everybody, everyone might have to take a cut, but it's going to be equal,
right?
And then some class size.
Yeah.
The class size would be for me personally, that's the last. I'd rather see the two non-pupil days. I'd rather see a 2% reduction in salary and freezing a step. We've been very, very fortunate that we haven't cut anybody's salaries.
How many people are we having retire next year?
We don't have a number right now. This coming year, going for into next year?
Because if we increase class size to 22, that's going to affect 9 employees.
Mm-hmm.
If we had 9 people retiring...
No, but they're not the right place.
Nine
K through 3,
right.
That's the problem.
Right.
That's the problem, 9 K through 3. Yeah, the 9 you might get close on doing. And then if you scare people, they'll go out and look, too.
And I'm not personally known in these times where a retirement initiative in place. I don't think you'd really save money on that because people would retire anyhow.
No. I don't want to give an incentive right now. I don't think we have the money to do that.
I'll be an incentive if I could pick the ones that go.
I understand. I'm not recommending it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't think, as we talk about retirement, I don't see that as an option.
I'm in.
Mr. Spence, what are your suggestions?
Well, I may have a contrary point of view on some of this stuff. I think transportation is a no-brainer because that only serves a very limited population, and we don't have long distances to travel. And a lot of our kids and schools already are done that way. So I think we do transportation. If we can freeze step, I think that's good. I have no problem raising class size. Now people have, I didn't even have air conditioning in my class of 35 kids in first grade. But I don't mind going to 22. I could probably buy off on 25. And then I have a fundamental problem with reductions in salary. And now the freeze would not be a reduction because, they're still getting the salary they were
restored.
Getting.
Yeah, it has to be restored at some point of time also.
Well, why? That's the negotiation item.
Right.
Yeah, in theory, it has to be restored. And they can give us the names of the teachers we fire.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You look at
it's negotiated. So I'd like to freeze it, but I'm opposed to across-the-board salary decrease, and I'm opposed to furlough days generally, and the reason is all you do is make it horrible for everybody. And, the idea of being fair as you cut everybody's salary in the district, it doesn't bring people together, it makes them mad, and it makes them angry, and it makes them ticked off because they got to make a payment. And I understand that there's people that might lose their jobs, but I think overall for the district, that ends up being better than having every employee mad at some level.
Ms. Shoemaker?
I am okay with increasing the class size. I would like to see a number for the secondary increase because that may help determine some of the rest. I'm concerned with the K through 3, that what happens a year from now if they don't let you continue to have the waiver to have those numbers of students, what the fiscal impact will be then. Freeze step, it seems like a no-brainer to me. I am against furlough days. I may be convinced to do the 2 days because it doesn't affect the students, but I'm really against it in general. The reduction in salary, I don't like it, but when you're 80 to 85% of our budget, and we, at this point, will have no choice. So those are my list.
They get to 2-6 without reducing salary.
Excuse me?
If you know, on class size and transportation, and if you can get free step, you know, you get very close there. And the secondary increase isn't determined yet, so, I mean, there will be some money there, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you get close to that number without cutting people's salaries or furlough days.
And what we have to also remember when we're discussing this, though, this is the optimistic projections. I don't think there's many of us up here who actually think the optimistic projections are going to be what happens. And so we also have to be thinking about steeper cuts.
Absolutely.
Than the 2.6.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, I guess what I'm hearing is a combination of things, and I think we could put something together with a combination of these, taking in all of your recommendations without committing to any one of them, that this would be the direction that we should be going. Would you agree with that? Yeah, I agree with you. If this is the optimistic, and even with this, even optimistically, the next year we're also looking at another 700,000.
I mean, furlough days are really cutting people's salary.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. But we eventually have to replenish.
Hmm?
We eventually have to replenish. Furlough days are uglier. But one thing that we had asked as we were starting this budget process and discussing it months and months ago was that we were going to get a list of priorities from the stakeholders.
I gave you that as a principles. And I think for right now, that's whatever right now that we have in this bucket, mm-hmm. starting as soon as we come back in August, we are going to be working with all of our stakeholders because then it's a reality of what we're doing. But I did provide you this. We did have this conversation with our principals.
Yeah, but you don't have the librarians on there that the principals put back on.
That's true. We didn't have the team.
Exactly.
See, I read your list.
On transportation, the schools I would worry about would be West Cove and California. Because of the way we realign those schools. So at one point in their educational career, they will not be going to what we would have once considered their home school. How far would those kindergartners be walking if we did away with transportation?
Well, we would have to do a study on that. I don't know that we have that information right now, and I know that that's an issue. I think the other one was...
Walnut Grove, we shouldn't be doing now if we follow our board policy. That's all different.
Right.
It's for some reason we're not following our board policy when it comes to Walnut Grove transportation.
Well, and Walnut Grove, those children, some of those students are coming from Monta Vista. That
was their choice.
Well, it was the way we did the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely not the closest school for them. And then Vine, they, I don't know if they have sidewalks down that hill to get to school.
You mean from the houses that are $1 million up there? You're not sure there's sidewalks up there?
All the way down to the school, I'm trying
those
to.
Sidewalks up there.
There are sidewalks.
To get to the school, though?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just and there's even the ways Hills, up South Hills Development doesn't have it.
You can walk down to Azusa. Kids who go to Holland Crest know that you go over Aromas Hill down to Holland Crest.
No, I know that. But I mean, they don't have sidewalks up there. In all of it.
Okay. From what I've walked, they have. But, I mean, I think that's an issue we have at a lot of the schools. For example, I do live in South Hills. My home school for my nephew is Vine when Merced is actually closer.
Yeah, the home school thing, I mean, I remember being bused from where I live where Cameron and Orange to Westco when, you know, Orangewood. And we passed Orangewood. And we walked it, actually. And it was snowing, I remember. I remember it was snowing, too.
You didn't have shoes, right?
Yeah, we didn't have shoes.
Well, you know, that raises a good point. I guess the schools will have to be prepared also for not necessarily losing students, but the faces may change because maybe those students may decide to go to Edgewood as opposed to Walnut Grove. So we have to be ready for that.
But, so I think for the purpose of this budget, we will put a combination of these things in our contingency plan with no...
I just think it will be easier to sell the other cuts if you didn't cut the rest of the remaining staff with salary cuts or furloughs, whatever you want to call them.
I like the freeze because it's across the board.
The salary freeze is different because that's an increase that's coming. But once you start cutting, because, you know, man, that's when you're just going to, you know.
That can be their decision. It can be communicated to us through negotiations about any of these items.
Well,
if they prefer that people get laid off instead of taking across-the-board cuts, then that's something they'll negotiate with
us. They'll do that in a heartbeat. They already did it the one time when, you know, with Vladimir. I remember, you know, that came a suggestion, and a couple people said, oh, let's all take cuts. We'll all take cuts instead of, you know, to keep class size low. And then the union went in and signed a deal. No, we won't. You know?
I think they're ready to have these hard conversations.
So, I just don't think that. I think you're better off without furloughs and without cutting their pay.
Thank you so much. Oh, I'm sorry, you had a comment.
I have just one more slide also, just before we go. Just again to reiterate, basically for our adopted budget, LACO definitely need the board-approved contingency plan as to what we're planning to do.
You know, when we send them our plan, can we get a contingency plan from LACO for their operations since they handle our financial operations and several other services for it? Because I've never seen their contingency plan on how they're going to deal with the budgets. So can we ask for that?
We actually just did a incentive and they informed the employees next year.
Yeah, well, I would like to get a copy of their contingency plan.
We'll
and maybe they can sign a statement saying that their board and staff went through training to understand how budgets work, too. If we can all get that, like the one they sent us, that'd be great.
Okay, so we'll work on this, bring it back. It will be part of the budget that you will be adopting in June.
Can you just tell me, you said you were going to come back with some different ones, but what were the highlights that you heard? I have arrows all over the place now.
I heard a little bit of
she said she heard a little bit of everything in there.
I heard some I'd vote for and some I wouldn't.
I think you all feel that way. I hear class size reduction in the area of 22, at the worst 25. Furlough days, two could be considered because it might not affect students. Freeze in step, probably the first three that I would write down. And then after that, transportation and...
you know, maybe that's the negotiating thing with the union, though, is you give them the choice between the two furlough days and the freeze.
Right.
And I think the furlough days end up hurting the retirement stuff, though, doesn't it? Like the timing of that for their credits? Am I wrong?
That's why I think the stirs? Freeze is really...
And so, I mean... That's how
those right here, you know, and...
Now, that still doesn't get us to $2.1 million.
Well, if you did the 25 to 1, 1.3,
and then the step...
Oh, you went to 25.
Yeah.
Okay.
In my head, and then 300.
Okay, I was looking at the 22.
I went to 25, and then I did the freeze step, and then I did the eliminate transportation. But also, keep in mind, we still don't have the savings from the secondary increase in...
And there may be other things. These are just the big ticket items. Yeah. There are other things.
I mean, the secondary would not be that high because we don't get the CSR revenue, but we'll compute the secondary numbers.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what?
The secondary.
You don't have the reduction bonus or whatever, right. And we don't have the penalty. But there's still savings associated with that. Yeah.
Okay. The other thing is, and again, this is going to be brought in slowly, but if this is the optimistic look, and if the initiatives pass, we're going to be looking at a different funding model, and they're looking at throwing class size reduction funding into the base and not giving it extra. They're looking at a lot of things that we get extra funding to be thrown into the base. So that's if that happens, we're looking at things very differently in terms of what the recommendations would be.
That's a tough nut to crack, I think, though.
Now, let's say it does pass and they change the funding model. Will that be for the 13-14?
No, they're taking 7 years to bring it in. I think you said 5% of
5% and 12-13. It'll be increased to 15% over 13-14, and it gradually will increase. For the first 1 year, he's going to hold the district harmless. Basically, you will not lose revenue if your weighted student funding formula shows that there is a reduction compared to the revenue limit.
But the way I look that he's moving is that everything is flexible, that you're going to get the sum of money, and you can decide what you want to spend it on. And although that sounds good, if you're getting less money, you're just getting less money to decide what you're going to spend on.
No, but the difficulty is there's constituent groups behind different streams of money.
Right.
And, you know, getting the legislature to buy off, and that's going to be hard, one. And then, I just don't see that long-term it's going to be hard for them to sustain. And it's not fun to announce, by the way. It's, you know, for people to say, I got a new funding program for an extra 20 cents for every student. They want to say, oh, I got a book program that does this or, you know, something like that. So.
The hard thing is we're doing this, we're also trying to find ways to fund technology so we're ready for the core standards. So it's very, very difficult times.
Thank you so much.
Just the last slide moving on. Was the timeline. Basically, right now, today is the first draft presentation. Between now and end of this month and also the first week of months, what our fiscal services staff would do is basically enter the budget in our financial system and then upload it to the CDSAC software. Once that's done, we'll be able to run the preliminary numbers and come back to you guys at 12th of June for the second draft, and then we can print the budget for public review on. And it will be adopted on the 26th of June. On the next board meeting also, we'll have another agenda item for the categorical program flexibility. That's new this year. We have to hold it in a separate session from the adoption of budget. So basically, that will say what are the flexibility that the board is going to adopt. That's all I have.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You stood with us to the very end. Ms. Poulos has a question.
It sounds like we're taking the optimistic view, and then we're going to put in to the county what our cuts are going to be. But we're sending in, as you're putting everything into the computer, it's the optimistic.
That's right. With the conservative as is, we'll not be certified positive. Because we are going to the minimum ending fund balance on our first out year. Second out year, we are negative, unless we can show drastic cuts out there. It will be to the tune of about $6.5 million for 13-14.
Right.
Thank you. That's scary, but we're wishful thinking about you.
I mean, everybody was sitting at this meeting, just kind of like there's thousands of people. And
did someone at the end ask, is everybody here in optimist? Yeah. Like they did at CSBA? Like at CSBA?
We're all going to be optimistic so we don't have to have a qualified.
Okay, any other board discussion? Okay, dates to remember. May 28th is Memorial Day. It's a holiday. The schools and the district's office are closed. June 7th is our graduation at West Covina High School and on the Thyberg Field at 7 p.m. June 8th, Edgewood Middle School promotion at 9 o'clock. Also, Hollencrest Middle School promotion at 9 o'clock and Walnut Grove Intermediate promotion at 9 o'clock. All three on June 8th, 9 o'clock. Also on June 8th, Coronado graduation at Edgewood Middle School's gym. And that's at 6 p.m. The last day of school for the school year is June 8th. Our next Board of Education meeting is June the 12th. And for those that are interested, San Jose Charter Academy's promotion, eighth grade promotion, is on June the 12th as well at 5 p.m. at Citrus. Okay, with that, we call this meeting adjourned at 10. We are going into closed session. We are not adjourned. Sorry, everyone. We are going to closed session.